today for that, but whatever you can attend, we really are pleased that you could be with us. So I'd like to invite our first speaker, Catherine Havel, to come to the podium and talk to us about her study and her findings. Enjoy the morning.
Thanks, Dr. Bruden. Okay, so hi everybody. My name is Catherine Abel, and I'm a direct entry student. So I'm going to talk to you about my project, which is entitled Women's Postpartum Depression Symptoms, Men's and Women's Perceptions of the Causes. So just a brief outline of how my presentation will go today. I'll first introduce you to the key concepts underlying my project, and then I'm going to go with the methods I use in the study, then with the results, and I'm going to end with a discussion and conclusion. So in terms of introduction, first things first, what is postpartum depression? Well, postpartum depression, according to the DSM and the ICD-10, it has symptoms, developments, and outcomes that are similar to those encountered in non-postpartum related depressive disorders. So it's pretty similar to general depression. The difference is in terms of the timing, the onset. It happens in the first 12 months after the birth. So some of the most reported symptoms include recurrent and impairing feelings of dysphoria, tearfulness, hopelessness, agitation, anxiety, guilt, or fatigue. But why study postpartum depression exactly? Why not focus on general depression? Well, if we look at the prevalence, the current studies show that 10 to 15% of the new mothers actually have signs of postpartum depression. And those are pretty conservative numbers. According to also recent studies, it would be, in fact, 30% of mothers who would be suffering from postpartum depression. And the issue is that we know that it can have long-term negative implications for not only the mothers, but also for their whole family. And the other issue is that very little is currently known regarding how mothers perceive their postpartum depression symptoms compared to how their partners do. And this especially related to what has caused the postpartum depression. So that's why our study examined two questions. So first, what are men's and women's perception of women's postpartum depression symptoms? And this especially related to the causes. And two, what are the similarities and the differences between partners' perceptions of women's postpartum depression symptoms? So in terms of method, we did a qualitative descriptive study using in-depth semi-structured interviews of heterosexual couples. So we had an N of 60 participants, so 30 women and 30 men. The length of the interviews ranged from about 30 minutes to 90 minutes, and they were open-coded. So we used a purposive sampling from a primary study led by Dr. Feely here in the back. And this study was comparing care preferences for care refusers and care acceptors related to postpartum depression. So we did the interviews during home visits in two urban areas of Quebec. So in terms of the inclusion criteria, both partners needed to agree to participate in the study and to be audiotaped. The birth had to happen in the last 12 months before the interview. The women had to have a score of at least 12 on the EPDS, so the Edinburgh Postpartum Depression Scale. That's a 10-items questionnaire that is used in clinical settings to screen for postpartum depression. And that this score had to happen in the last in the 12 months following the birth. Sorry. In terms of the participants, they also had to have the ability to communicate in English or in French, and they had to be living in the Greater Montreal area or in Sherbrooke. So we had only one exclusion criterion, and that was if the mother had a diagnosis of postpartum psychosis. So that's a big table. I'll just walk you through it. So that's just a bit to show you the social demographics of our population. So in terms of age, men and women were pretty similar. We can see that at the interview, the women had a lower score on the PDS than at the recruitment, which is concurrent with the literature. Women tend to get better with time. What's interesting, though, is that we had the men also take the EPDS at the interview, and we can see that they're still under the cutoff, but they still show some signs of depression themselves. So in terms of the number of children, men and women were similar, and for most of the participants, they just had their first child. More than 50% of the participants were Canadian-born. Women tended to be to have higher levels of education than men, and 20% of the women had a previous history of mental illness. So in terms of the results, so that's a big figure. I'll just walk you through it also. We found that men and women attributed the postpartum depression symptoms to 9 causes. So the first one I'm going to talk to you about is the unmet birth expectation. So that relates to the fact that the woman had some idea about how the birth experience would go, and that the reality was not in line with what actually happened. Another cause that was mentioned were the biophysical issues. So this category relates to strictly biological causes, such as, for example, sleep or fatigue, but also to medication misdoses, or also to hormones. So just an example of this one of the women said, "I wasn't sleeping at all, and really, I was to the point where my exhaustion was tremendous. Night after night, I was crying. I was crying because I was so tired. I wasn't sleeping at all. After a few nights, it was too much." One of the other causes that were mentioned were societal pressure. This relates to excessive pressure from the general society that is asked on women. We also had transition to parenthood, and this could relate either to one's loss of identity, but also to one's loss of time for oneself, or also to one's need to meet the expectation of what it means to be a good parent. So in this regard, one of the men said, "At first, my wife was a little, not anxious, but worried about being able to do things, to do them well, so the baby will have everything he needs. It was about her role as a mother and about doing it well." Another causes was the social related to social connectedness and support, and this related to both instrumental support from peers, families, or friends, but also the emotional support from them. We also had people attributing the postpartum depression to one's personality and past psychological history. So either they attributed it to one's way of coping, or also to one's previous history of mental illness. We also had causes that did not pertain to the parents, but to the child, him or herself. And this related to child's health and temperament. So, for example, this happened when the child was premature and had to be hospitalized, but also in cases of babies who were, quote-unquote, difficult babies. Another cause that was seen by men and women were the unmet care needs from the healthcare professionals. And this related to either care that was received, but that did not meet the parents' expectations, or care that was not received and that they would have liked to receive. And one big issue related to this cause is the issue of pressure to breastfeed from the healthcare providers. And in this regard, one of the women said, "And then at the hospital, they were like brainwashing me with, 'You have to breastfeed, you have to breastfeed,' and nothing was coming out. So all I was doing was crying. It was really with that it really got to me." And finally, men and women identified also other life stressors, which could be either some pileup of events or financial issues, for example. So briefly, men and women both perceive postpartum depression symptoms to be the result of multiple causes. So nobody identified only one cause as having led to the postpartum depression. And other than for societal pressure, which was only mentioned by men, all the causes were identified by both men and women equally. So biophysical issues were mentioned by at least one member in all the couples, so it was very prevalent, and all the women with a history of mental illness, except one, reported their history as a cause. So in terms of discussion, well, we have seen that postpartum depression is seen as having multiple causes by both men and women. And what's interesting is that the perceived causes are actually concordant with the current literature on our risk factors for postpartum depression. What is different, though, with our study is that the gender-based results are actually in opposition with the current literature. And by current literature, I mean there was only one study that was done on the subject in 2006 in Australia with an N of 6. So one of the differences at the time in Australia and with our participants is according to the length of paternal leave. So that's why we hypothesized that Quebec's extended paternal leaves could explain why men and women saw the causes as similarly. Just because by allowing men to stay longer at home, they would probably more able to fully grasp the situation as the women did. But it's also possible that our recruitment method explained why men and women have similar perceptions. Remember, we asked only for participants who both agreed to participate. So that means that from the beginning, maybe they had a higher communication skill in a couple. In terms of implications for practice, well, the results show us that healthcare providers could have a positive impact on women's postpartum symptoms by either doing preventive assessments when encountering patients who are living with the mentioned causes, so treating them as risk factors, or also by adopting a more comprehensive practice, and this particularly regarding breastfeeding. So in terms of future directions, it would be interesting to analyze the data in terms of couples as dyads. So look at the intra-couple agreement, because for the moment, we only compared men and women, regardless of their status in the couple. And it would be interesting to look if this impacts the women's EPDS score. The only problem, though, with that is that we would need to find a way to, quote-unquote, quantify the levels of agreements because our data come from interviews which are qualitative. It would also be interesting to look at the impact of the length of the paternal leaves and to see if this increases proportionally with intra-couple agreement. So in terms of acknowledgments, I'd really like to thank Dr. Feely and all her team who allowed me to do this research, and also for Dr. Feely's excellent feedback and support for this past year and a half. And I'd also like to thank you and ask you if you have any questions. Yeah, the problem was that in the first interviews, the questions that we had were not directly focused on what I was looking for in the study. It's just that with time, we saw that that was something that was embedded in the narratives of the participant, and that's why we decided to go that way, because the data was actually somehow there. It's just that it wasn't as focused in the first interviews. So that was difficult, because we didn't want to interpret what participants were saying.
Yeah, and you weren't able, not interviewing, to go back and validate some of those statements, as you said, that you're not sure exactly the meaning underlying.
Well, we use only data where we were sure, so there's no interpretation, but
And the other question I had related to that was that you said it came from an original data of care refusers and acceptors. Can you tell me what with the ones that you had selected, was there any
for the moment, there was no correlation with either care refusers or care acceptors. There was just a tendency towards the unmet care needs, but that's not, well, there's no way we can measure significance, but we had also that throughout the two groups. Yes, Dr. Mehari?
You didn't say at what point in the year patients were tested. Is there any difference in their score, PPD score, say the first 6 months or
and after? Okay, so your question is that if there's any difference according to the time where the participants were tested, and we didn't see any difference in this regard.
And what are societal pressures?
So in terms that was only mentioned by men, so it's the fact that society asks too much of women. So in terms of they have to be good mothers, they have to go to work and be performing, they have to be good lovers. So it's just that it's a pileup of high demands from society towards mothers. And interestingly, that wasn't mentioned by women, but only by men. Yes?
Another question. In terms of recommendations as a clinician, if you were going to be a CNS working in this area, what would you want to tackle given all the points now? I know you said you talked about preventive assessment, you know, thinking about that in terms of your assessment of these couples, but are there things that you want to institute on the unit or sensitize?
Other things, just about how much...
Yeah,
sorry. So your question, Dr. Pruden's question, was what we could do as a clinician and what was the emphasis I'd put on. I'd put the emphasis on the guilt as healthcare practitioners we can put on women just by, yes, we want the best for the baby, but we tend to forget that the mother-baby is a dyad. And if we don't take care also of the mother, well, the baby is going to end up suffering also. So we really should look at them as a dyad and look what is best for them as a dyad and be mindful that our own practice can induce guilt in the mothers and that will negatively affect the mother-baby dyad in the end. Dr. Feely?
I thought of something as you were presenting today, Catherine. It was an excellent presentation, by the way.
Thanks. So the question was if I can see a pattern of some, in terms of combinations of causes that would go together. From the moment, I have not seen any, but I have to admit that I did not look specifically at that, so it's also probable that there would be some. So yeah, that would be interesting to look in the future. Any other question? So thank you.